I don't want a pickle. I just want to ride on my motorcycle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is the Nokomoto Podcast, episode number 202. Second episode of season 8. I'm your host, Moto G Pete, and with me is your other host, Swiggy.
Yo.
Coming to you from, we still don't have a name for this studio, do we?
Not really.
No. Anyway, well, coming to you from the listener-funded studio. You know, Sweet A at Moto One Podcast Network Studios was just getting a little too ghetto for us. I mean, they're still technically the studio and helping us distribute this, but like, you know. So, I mean, I haven't even seen the president of Moto One for like, since before Christmas. I just cold quit on him, I guess. I don't know. He was begging for me to take him with us. Take him with us when we left. It was pretty sad. Anyway, what are we going to talk about on this episode? We were throwing around a lot of ideas. I think we want to discuss if classic-styled motorcycles are dead. I think they might be. I don't know about dead, but they're at least dying. We'll get into it. I think we teased at the end of the last episode that 400s might be the new 600s. Do we have emails this week? We must.
I haven't checked, but I can take a look.
It'll be a surprise. and of course, we've got Best Worst Bike in the World this week. Ooh, and we get to do one of my favorite things ever, which I reminded you just before we started recording. We get to play Gossip Girl about all the new MotoGP liveries. I love this. It's become a yearly tradition.
Have you seen what Yamaha is wearing?
I have, and I have opinions. So, yeah, that's. Are you ready for this, Wiggs?
I am.
Because I know you haven't seen what Yamaha's wearing.
No, I haven't. I haven't been caught up on anything.
Yamaha is calling it camouflage. I call it trashy. So, okay. All right. So let's start off with Best Worst Bike in the World this week, like we always do.
Let's do it.
Okay, it's time for Best Worst Bike in the World this week. This is our signature segment where we present to you two motorcycles. Swiggs and I do not know what each other have chosen. It's always, well, except for the one time, a surprise. One will be the best bike in the world this week and one will be the worst. It might be your bike, but calm down if it is, okay? Just send your comments to contact@nokomotopodcast.com. And all will be resolved. We'll read your email and it's going to be great. Okay. So Swiggs, you have worst bike in the world this week, right?
I do.
And if every one of the listeners promises to leave a 5-star rating and review, you'll reveal it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Are you ready to reveal it?
I am.
And the worst bike in the world this week is...
the 1995 Kajiva W16.
I know what this is. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Pop quiz. What Bond movie was this bike in?
Isn't this the bike that was in Casino Royale?
Nope.
No.
The year should give you a clue.
95? The Bond film from 95 was... that must have been Tomorrow Never Dies.
Nope. All right, you've had enough guesses.
Well, wait, was it released earlier and then they put it in Die Another Day?
Earlier than that.
There's no way this was in GoldenEye.
It was.
Really?
Let me, I'll leave the audio off of the podcast, but I'll just remind, remind you real quick.
Well, because I know the Montauk, the BMW is the awful bike. Oh, that he rides to the end of the runway. Of course.
Yes.
Okay. Look at those. Yeah, they're Kojima. Excellent. Oh, I should have known this. I mean, not only am I well-versed in James Bond, this is one of my personal favorites. I don't know if it's the best Bond movie, but this is top three best Bond movies ever. Fight me about it. Oh, fantastic. Let's get this more in context. There's a great yes. Oh, hitting him right in the ribs.
This is gonna be so fun for the podcast listeners who can't.
So we're watching the scene, the intro scene. Like, the movie literally opens with this motorcycle.
This is
how could I have forgotten this?
This is the pre-title sequence.
The pre-title sequence, yeah. And he rides it off the cliff after the airplane. Oh, wonderful. And hats off to Kojima for going, yeah, you can ride our bike off a cliff.
Well, when you hear a bit more about the bike, you'll realize that that's kind of fair.
Well, we're historically cruel to dual sports.
We are, but we're also historically rather fond of Kojima. Not so much in this case. Because what you have to remember is that at this point, Kojima wasn't really Kojima anymore. This is 95.
Wait, are we just going to start having throwbacks to when Kojima was Kojima?
Well, this is thoroughly in the area of Italian motorcycle manufacturers being, you know, traded like Pokemon cards.
So this was Ducati years for Kojima, right?
This is Kojima, Ducati, Moto Marini.
Right.
So this bike. It is a titled dual sport, and it has a 600cc air-cooled engine, and it's kind of what you would expect for the most part, except for the fact that it's trash in every way.
Well, what motor is in it? Because it's not going to be a motor made by Kojima.
It's not. Which actually makes it all the more surprising because it's a Rotax.
Okay.
Not only is a Rotax, it's a really cool looking,
all Rotaxes are cool swigs. Yeah.
But this is a 600 single dual exhaust.
Yeah.
Which always looks cool. Unfortunately, like I said, it's trash. Okay, so this is a 600cc, it's a wide bore motor. It's almost like 1.5 to 1. Like, it's pretty aggressive, and you'd think it'd be pretty high performance.
Huh.
And it's high revving as well.
Well, yeah.
But it only makes 34 horsepower.
That doesn't totally shock me for 95, but you'd be hoping for 40 plus, yeah.
And the reason for that is that it's 7.8 to 1 compression.
Right.
The W650 has higher compression than this motor does.
So, I gotta wonder then, is the whole point of this bike that they were trying to sell, like, military contracts or something and just go, look, you can run this thing off of snot and it's unkillable. The engine will never wear out. Just put some kind of oil in it and you're fine.
So that was kind of the intent. And there is, I think there's like a W12, and there are other, like, kind of W model bikes that Kojima made before. Like, there was a one that was a 300cc single that I do believe the Italian military used for a while. And there were some that they were trying to push as, like, standard, like, NATO military motorcycles. But they never caught on.
Well, your biggest problem is that If we look at this, how is it making 36.5 foot-pounds of torque if it's that wide bore? I'm confused by how this is even possible out of this engine. I would have expected a 600 single with a bore of 102 and a 72 mil stroke would be down in the 20s for, because I was about to say, well, all right, this is all well and good, you know, 34 horsepower, 600. We'd expect that out of like a KLR 650 or something, which has gone before and after this, totally fine. But, you know, the KLR 650 had, you know, gob loads of torque and all that stuff and the gearing and everything. But this seems to be making decent torque as well for that 600 capacity. So how, I mean, these numbers just must not be accurate.
That's probably somewhat true. Now, the problem is with this bike is, just imagine, what if I told you you could buy a KLR 650 that was 20 pounds heavier, with 2 less gallons of fuel, with 8 less horsepower, with worse suspension, it costs more, and it's less reliable and harder to get parts. Because that's essentially what this bike is. This bike is...
Is the claimed horsepower on a KLR above 40?
42.
Oh, really? On the claimed horsepower? Oh. I always assumed that the KLR was around the mid-30s as well. Okay. I mean, 8 horsepower is not setting... But still, yeah. What was the torque on the KLR?
I believe it was around 40.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, this is just detuned to everything, but, I mean, if it's for something military, then that doesn't matter. But I guess the question we have to ask is, did they sell any to any military? Well, we can answer that question. It was only in production for 3 years, so clearly not.
No, they did.
Right. If this had been bought by some European military and stayed in production because of that, I think this is best bike in the world candidate. To just go, guess what? We're going to take the 600 class dual sports and detune the shit out of it and make it unbreakable. It's going to be a European unbreakable bike, right? The rarest of them all, right? But as it is, it's kind of just weak sauce.
Now, I couldn't find a lot of direct sources for any information on this bike, because this is kind of pre, you know, internet publication era, and I couldn't find anyone who would actually put text on. I couldn't find a single outlet that had text on the internet about this bike, and everything that I found was basically forum posts of guys saying, like, hey, I just picked up this sweet Kajiva for real cheap. And then, like, all the other experienced people in the forum saying, my God, you poor bastard. What have you done?
I mean, I could even go with it. I mean, can we look down this this spec sheet and see what... Oh, my God, the fucking dogs are at it again. Anyway, what does it tell us what the shocks are? Did maybe they go real heavy on the suspension and go, look, it's a little bit slower, but guess what? You can actually use this more because the suspension's fucking awesome. What, maybe that?
No, people didn't say the suspension was very good either.
Ugh. I mean, it says it is at least a monoshock, but for a dual sport by 94, that's no big deal. Um, 240 millimeters in the back, 200 mil. So what's 200 millimeters to inches? Because this better be over to like 11 inches.
250 would be 10 inches.
So what? This is under 10 inches of travel.
7.5.
Seven is
only eight.
I want Okay, this is getting, because if I go like KLR, you know, front wheel travel here, I'm going to get a number like around 10 inches at least, I feel. What? It's got a 20 inch front wheel. I need the specs. I need the specs. Give me the specs, you internet. Ugh. That's the, no, not the 250. Fuck you. DuckDuckGo, I am so close to quitting on you. Well, we got 9.1 inches. No, still, that's the 250. Well, the 250 must have as like comparable front wheel travel to the 650. I mean, it was a short-lived model. KLR 650 specs and pictures. I'm not finding it quick enough. It doesn't matter. The point is that even the KLR 250 had 9 inches of wheel travel. Like, you can't. So this is around 8 inches, you said?
8 on the front, 9
on the back.
And something, 9 and change on the back.
So it's even cheap on the suspension, too. Oh, you're right. In my older age, I am willing to forgive lower horsepower and torque and all this stuff if we're at least exchanging that for better suspension. Because there's an argument. Well, you can make a bike with all the fucking, you know, horsepower in the world. If you got shit suspension, your horsepower just doesn't even fucking count, right? How are you going to get that power to the ground effectively? How are you going to corner correctly, right? It doesn't matter if your suspension's for shit. So, you're right. I tried to be nice because I like Kajiva. And I only like Kajiva because it's so fucking weird, right?
Well, in fairness, this isn't really an old school Kajiva because essentially this is
parts bin Kajiva years. Yeah.
This is parts bin from like several different badges, essentially.
Yeah. It's sad. Although you gotta give it to Kajiva in 1994 here or whatever with those gold rims.
I will say this is one of the best looking dirt bikes of the era. It's aesthetically, it's fantastic.
It is aesthetically fantastic. Yeah, it's too bad. It's too bad. Yeah,
I mean, not only has all of its competitors outlived it, but even the models from that same year are still around and outliving it. People are still happy to buy 90s KLR 650s. There are some places in Australia you can pick up one of these for less than $1,000 redos.
There's still a significant WR 400 cult. Like the first year with the four valve motors, you know, before they went to the 425s and all that stuff.
That's because people are anal about weight, and the W400 was no electronic start and no battery.
What, it doesn't matter. The reason, like, there's just still a significant cult around that bike. Which was what, 98? Something comparable to this in years.
I think it was like 98 to 01.
That sounds right for WRs and the first YZ400. I want to say it was very late 90s, that early four-stroke 400. That I think even for like a year and a half, 2 years, they let race against 252 strokes before they had like a real four-stroke class, before they were separate. But yeah, anyway, this is hot garbage, and I tried to be nice, but when you're the lowest on every single spec.
And a premium brand,
that's no good. Yeah, no wonder. Okay, all right. We ready to move on to best bike in the world this week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, and... Oh, what happened to my sound effects? Oh my gosh, these fucking ads. It's my fault. I should have used Patreon money to pay for this thing. Fucking give me the sound effects. No, I don't care about a word search game. Fuck you. All right. And the best bike in the world this week is the 2023. This will be no shock. Kawasaki ZX4RR. So, in the last few weeks, everyone has gotten their hands on the specs and rough pricing for what this is going to be. And we have to talk about this bike. There's no way we can't talk about this bike, because in the last 6 months, especially you, Swigs, have lamented the passing, you know, the dying of inline four motors. Everything's gone to a twin or a triple for like our big premium engines, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kawasaki and Triumph are making these 750 to 900cc inline threes. And there's what? The R1, the CBR 1000, the Gixxer 1000, the ZX10R. But there's like very few. Only really the Japanese are making 1 liter inline fours.
There is the RSV4. And I think, is BMW still making the.
I guess Ducati's got a 1 liter V4 as well. Or 1100 V4. But, I mean, it's less common than it used to be. And these are bikes that are not being pushed in the lineup, and they're kind of probably not going to get a lot of updates, and they're on the chopping block, right? They only continue to be sold to the public, I think, for racing homologation purposes.
Probably.
I think that's what's keeping these bikes on life support. For bikes being heavily pushed towards the public, it is 600 to 750 twins. So, here comes a bike that seemingly would make almost zero sense. The specs, though, are amazing. So there's two different versions of this bike. There's the ZX4R and there's the ZX4RR. And the RR with Ram Air and the KRT... Kawasaki Racing livery is I think 80 horsepower, which is nuts for a 400. And I want to say, I don't have the specs in front of me. I should have brought them up. Oh wait, no, I do have them right here. Sorry.
I think that's straight up like double a Ninja 400, like the base Ninja 400.
I think it's like 32 horsepower more, but yeah, it's a lot. Now, again, this is claimed, but, you know, Kawasaki tends to be more honest than other manufacturers about claimed horsepower. But the whole thing weighs somewhere around 400 pounds, which seems a little heavy for such a small bike, but we'll get into the reason of why it's 400 pounds.
I just had a realization.
What's that?
This is kind of moving into the category of the VFR 400.
Yes.
The high spec. And also this is legal in an intermediate license in Japan.
Uh-huh. So here's the thing. It's all these crazy awesome numbers. One of the reasons we're not seeing a lot of bikes like this is emissions. So one of the reasons that this bike is as expensive as it is, because the price is only like $1,000 cheaper than a ZX6R, if even. I mean, it's real close in price to the ZX6R. So it's like, why would you buy a ZX6R? Well, right now, maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't buy this over a ZX6R. There's a lot of different things at play here. But one of them is I don't know how much longer the ZX6R is going to be around because of European emission standards and California emission standards. This has been designed to beat them for some time because this is an extra $1,000 more expensive than it should be. Because the way that they made this meet emissions is they basically daisy chained three catalytic converters together. I don't know if this is something they can do on the bigger bikes, or they will do, but that's why it's just a tad over 400 pounds and, you know, maybe a little bit heavier than just the Ninja 400, right? But this is, by all accounts, a really plucky little 400. Pretty high revving, 80 horsepower, big torque for a 400. Essentially kind of styled and premium in all the ways that the ZX6R is. It's just a 400. Here's my thing. You know, an R6 or a ZX6R, like the 636, are insane bikes. The 600s were unusable power. I want to say that given the weight, given the handling, given everything, the suspension, this is basically delivering a 90s 600 super sport experience. You're getting everything out of this 400 that you would have gotten out of an inline 4600 in 1995 to 2000, essentially. Essentially, this is what like a YZF 600 was going to give you in 1990 something. This is what a Katana was going to give you. This is what a Honda F4I was going to give you, essentially an experience. We're off a little bit. Oh, it is a little lower at 26.5 foot-pounds of torque. But that's – oh, so the peak torque is at 11,000 RPM. I think it does rev a little higher, more like 14,000. 14,000, that's pretty good. That's a pretty high – rev range. This thing is just a little shy of $10,000. Like I said, it's about $1,000 cheaper than a ZX6. Here's why it's best bike in the world, though. First of all, nothing else exists like this on the market right now, so it's a unique experience. But I think this is blazing the way. And I think this is the bike, this could be the bike that keeps inline four motors alive. By going, here is a platform, here's a setup, everyone else can copy this. Honda will have one, Suzuki will have one, Yamaha will have one, and this will be essentially the 400 racing league kind of spec class, and we'll still have high revving inline fours. They'll just be 400 instead of 600s, but I can live with that. If that's going to meet emissions, if it's going to be enough power, right? Like, if it's going to be all that, I think I can live with this. This is a future I can deal with.
Yeah, we know it's enough power. I mean, if everything does go that way, then this easily qualifies it as best bike. And in a way, I would kind of view that as like when Formula One announces a displacement reduction,
right?
You know, and they start going like hybrid and add all the features that like kind of start to slow the cars down a bit. Because, I mean, if Formula One had kept on the path that it was, like all of those cars would have been too fast for all the Formula One circuits,
right?
And honestly, there's a lot of places where the bikes are kind of pushing the limits, not just for the tracks, but for the riders as well.
Oh, they've been doing that since the 90s, yeah.
So, you know, this might be a good reset point.
Yeah. If this is a true, honest 80 horsepower, this is definitely enough. If that's an 80 horsepower that's overblown and it's really putting more like 6570 to the rear wheel, that's still something I can live with in a 400 pound package. And, you know, and for these sport bikes, I really kind of just want it to rev super high. For this kind of bike, you want it to vibrate, you want it to rev fucking crazy high. And also, in a way, this isn't a scary future. This bike is also kind of a fun past, because in the 80s and 90s, there were also a shit ton of these little hot 400 bikes. And this is a throwback to that as well. So it's a little bit of the future. It's a little bit of the past. It's a super high revving inline four. It's, and also I just love the idea of the three catalytic converters just kind of giving a fuck you to, you know, Kawasaki. That was, did Kawasaki put out like, you know, trot around hydrogen and electric models at EICMA to hide the fact that they put three catalytic converters on a high revving, you know, ICE bike, right? ICE engine bike, you know, to just say like, double fuck you to emissions. Like, oh, you thought we still wouldn't be able to build one of these? Fuck you. We can.
I bet people are gonna be buying these, doing exhaust swaps on them, and they're not even going to sell the... They're not even going to sell the exhaust to used parts stores. They're going straight to the scrapyard to sell the cats.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, yeah, like, what kind of power it really is capable of without all the emission stuff on it. I bet it's a 100-horsepower bike without all that nonsense on there.
I bet it just that sounds like 1,000 screaming cats if you put straight pipes on it.
Yeah, that's going to be great. So, I again, I want to say that I'm loving that in the last couple years, more fairings are coming back. I like the bodywork on this. I could have used it fully covering the motor, but you know what? We're okay. We've got cool graphics that extend from the tank onto the fairing. We've got a general line pointing at the front wheel. It's got that arch to it. We're going in the right direction here, styling wise. I have no complaints about any of Kawasaki's bodywork on any of their new stuff. I think it's some of the best looking sport bike styling that's out there. And they're completely correct to just copy basically the same headlights off of the 650 and the 400 and the 600 and the 1 liter. Just give them all that distinct Kawasaki look. Why wouldn't you? It's fantastic. I love that they're not afraid of their green. I love, you know, we've still got our Ninja logo. There's nothing to dislike here except the price. When people are like, well, a Ninja 400's like $49.99. Like, why would I spend the extra? Because this is a completely different kind of bike. You know, there's nothing wrong with a Ninja 400, but this is...
I quite like the Ninja 400.
I do too. But this is no Ninja 400. This is much closer to the 600 than it is the 400.
Right. Well, for one thing, the 400.
This is closer. This is Ninja's 650 numbers as a 400.
Right. Yeah.
So now some people might just say, like, I want more torque and give me the Ninja 650. I think I'd rather have the higher revs. I think I might do this before I did a Ninja 650. Well, if it was going to be my only bike, I'd probably go with the 650. Yeah. But even
if the numbers on this aren't bananas, at that 26 foot-pounds, this is going to be a way more technical ride.
Yes.
It'll be a lot faster, but it's going
to... More gear changes involved.
It's going to require a lot more finesse and precision to get everything out of it.
That's true. Yeah, it's going to take more skill to ride this bike. That's true. And kind of more guts. There's something to riding over 10,000 RPM. Most people won't do it. They feel like their bike's going to blow up, and they change gears more in that 7,000 RPM range.
That's what I mostly did when we were riding your Ninja over to St. Louis. But those few times when you do, just when you break 10,000, it's, there is something magical about it.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's also why on all of those bikes, second gear is always chewed out.
Yep. Well, that and people shifting without the clutch. Yeah. So anyway, so the natural extension of this is, so what is the likelihood that we see an inline 400 from Suzuki. Honda will be the last of the game if this happens. What's the likelihood that Suzuki does this next year? Because Suzuki would be the next to do it.
Oh, Suzuki would do it in a heartbeat.
Right. This is right up Suzuki's alley. This is the bike Suzuki would love to make. It's just that Suzuki can only do it if it's a legitimate part of the market. Right? Suzuki makes the most sport bikes at this point. If you, like, you know, they're almost like the... Suzuki's are like the TVR of motorcycles at this point, almost. They just make these kind of thoroughbred sport bikes with the least amount of technology possible.
Yeah.
I think Suzuki would love to make this bike, but Suzuki needs another company making the same bike, the same category of bike, for them to make one. They're like, well, we could make a crazy bike, you know, but it has to be compared against something else so we can, you know, have an argument that ours is best, right? Suzuki never made, like, something to really rival the V-Max because it was like, well why? That's not a market segment, really. I guess it was their power cruises in the 80s, but you know what I mean? Like, Suzuki doesn't really...
It's like people going up and saying, like, how come I can't, like, pair my phone, like, Bluetooth my phone to my Gixxer 750? And Suzuki's like, I don't know how that would make the bike go faster.
Right, like, yeah. You're riding it wrong, bro.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. So, I Suzuki might not be the next to do this because they might need Kawasaki and Yamaha to both be making a 400, and then they can go, well, now our 400 is best 400, right?
I don't know. I can imagine Suzuki coming along pretty quickly this, like, next year or the year after.
For the next 20 months, I am waiting with bated breath for the announcement of another 400 inline four. Because we're solidly moving on in time, and we're kind of getting into a 90s sport bike nostalgia thing that we predicted 5 years ago. We said it would be happening, and it's kind of starting to happen. Lots of things are being sort of 80s and 90s styled. The cost of what are now vintage 80s and 90s sport bikes and super bikes are going way up. It's the thing that we predicted is happening. And if all the original bikes from that era are cost too much, or it's too much to restore them, or they need too much maintenance, or whatever, something new that promises, like, a feeling of the old will sell. So, again, I love the numbers from this little bike. I love the idea of an insane 400, but I also love what this predicts for the future. Am I going to buy one right now? Probably not. But I totally understand why people will. And I hope that they do in huge numbers, because I do not want to see inline four motors go away. And if people are willing to pay a little bit of a premium for an inline four motor, then 600s and 1 liters will always come back at some point.
You know, if the frame size on this is somewhere between a Ninja 400 and a 650... this is going to be the sweetest lane splitter of all time.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Anyway, I love this. All right, where do we want to go next? Do we want to, like, just do emails randomly in the middle of an episode? Or do you want to go into more frivolous, probably highly inaccurate predictions of where the market is going, talking about classic bikes? Okay, we interrupt the audio with a bad edit here, probably, to let you know that most of the audio we had recorded for this episode, we decided was complete garbage. It was meaningless drivel, and so we decided to sit down again and bring in a ringer to come up with much more original meaningless drivel to help us pad out this episode. So we are joined now by Junkie, who you'll remember was with us recently at episode 200. And yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, I'm the only one that's been getting invited back, so thank you for that.
Right. Well, I'm happy to have Eric Buell back anytime he wants. You and Eric Buell are really you're on the short list for first calls.
Nice.
So, well, I think all we discussed is we wanted to discuss needless moto inventions.
Yeah, very needless.
And we sure came up with some. We actually, for once, did some show prep. We came up with a list, didn't we?
Well,
we have shit, so it's not just a stupid game.
You sent me a good list, and I just saved the ones from our text thread a week ago, and I thought that was so cool. And then you sent me that list, and I was like, oh, I needed to do some proper show prep.
Oh, well, the list was, I just for shits and giggles, I asked ChatGPT to come up with needless inventions as well. There's only one I liked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do we just want to start with that, with needless inventions?
Yeah, I'd like to preface this with Matty Benedetto, I think is the dude's name, is the guy that really got me interested in this, because I've been following him for a while now, and he makes a lot of, he has a whole channel on YouTube and everything about useless inventions that he actually makes, and he thinks out and uses, you know, brain cells to actually make stuff that is completely useless. And I thought, that is fabulous. Who better to do a motorcycle version of this with than the Nokomoto guys? Because we always think of useless things like, you know, well, we'll get into it. I don't want to jump into it, but yeah, like that's exactly, you guys are the first ones to spring to mind, because we always have these fabulous inventions that we know are awesome, but there's not really a reason to have them except for the fact that we want to be, you know, twice as cool as the people out there on the road. So I have a couple here that we talked about, but let's hear some of the ones that you came up with the help of super. I mean, Tobor would be proud of this. He's over here nodding his head. He would be super proud of the ChatGPT contributions as well. So I'm going to let you guys kick it off.
Well, the first thing I asked ChatGPT to contribute was for more baby items, and it ethically said it couldn't suggest motorcycle baby accessories.
Oh, wah, wah.
I know. So I asked it for more just useless ones. The only one it gave me that kind of gave me a chuckle was like Google directions, but it only will give you the directions in rhyming couplets.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awesome.
ChatGPT just came up with that, and I was like, okay. But that got me thinking, okay, what if...
You know, that actually would be an amazing invention.
Yeah.
If you could have, like, you know, the when you ask AI to, like, do text-to-speech in a famous person's voice.
Exactly. I was going to say, what if Senna incorporated celebrity voices?
Mm. No, but what if you could do it in real time so that whatever music you were listening to, your turn-by-turn directions got incorporated into the lyrics of the song?
Like, whoa.
Like, wah, turn left here at the next stop sign. I'm one step closer to the destination, and I'm a turn left.
It's weirdly not that hard to do. You're just going to need one hell of a signal on your phone.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, yeah, like the processing power is probably going to be pretty difficult, and there's probably copyright issues. But this has to happen.
I'm just going to say, for something that's a lot easier, is that, you know, like Tesla will get, I think on Tesla you can already get celebrity voices for your directions.
Oh yeah, and like TomTom Go has been doing it forever.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, what if let's have Senna and Cardo get on this. That's my first needless invention. We don't, it's completely pointless and frivolous, but still pretty fun.
I would like oh God. And now that I started to talk, I forgot his name. That the famous, Attenborough. I'd like him to, David Attenborough, just to narrate my directions to me and make it sound wonderful. Every single turn I'm about to do is like a new, fresh new view on the world of, where I'm about to be headed, you know? So yeah, that'd be pretty sick. One of the ones, and you know what? Yeah, that wouldn't be too, I feel like that we're so close to that, We are very close to that. You know what they need to do is like those windshields that cost $85,000 because they have all the ADAS and radar stuff going through it. They need to project the actual arrow pointing on the street for you. And that's like the next step of this. One of the ones
that just like project it onto the road.
Yeah. Or project like, I don't know, the Duke boys in front of you and you're chasing the Duke boy. I don't know. You know, something like that.
The Duke boys. Like I tell you what, there's a lot of riders. There's a lot of people who I'll be following, and they always like change lanes at the last fucking second. It would be great if their GPS directions were like broadcast behind them so that you knew what the right turn was, so that you don't have to cut over at the last
second. That's not bad. So this is actually not a useless invention if Senna and Cardo just incorporate shared directions.
Yeah. I am bad at that too. I
this is getting a little too credible
for you. Yeah, let's get out of this junkie, shit.
Give us something just fucking stupid real quick.
Okay. This is actually from you. It's a headlight cover. And
headlight cover.
For when you don't want your headlight on, you know those situations when you're, I don't know when you don't want your headlight on, but there you go, a headlight cover.
When you're evading the cops.
There you go. You need a flip down headlight taillight cover. But still, please, if you're evading the cops, use your turn signals. I hate to see those people like turn corners into pedestrians.
Hold on, I actually have a stupid use for the headlight cover. Right.
Okay.
So the majority of sport bikes still are doing the split headlights. So one's your low beam and one's your high.
Mm.
And because people are constantly telling you that you have a headlight out, if it's the daytime, you can just cover up the high beam one, so people won't tell you that you have a headlight out.
I have another great useless one that just came to mind when you said that. A lot of sport bikes are still rocking the dual headlights. You have a huge attachment and it's rather cumbersome and it probably makes steering bad. But it mounts to the front of your bike and it's basically like a monocle where there's two headlights go into two separate, like beam, diffusers, and they point down into one. So it kind of looks like when you know those binoculars that you have, like night visions, how you look through two eyes, but it only comes out in one.
I'm imagining the Benjamin Franklin glasses from National Treasure.
Hmm. Was it two into one and really cumbersome? Something like that. Something just really stupid. And it makes your bike, what, 3 feet longer in the front, but it's not really needed. And that's what...
Does it just focus the beam?
Yeah,
somewhere,
it makes like them a lot stronger. But yeah, it makes them actually practical because it does like give you better night vision. But it's just like a huge pair of glasses that you put on the front of your motorcycle that turns two into one.
So at night, it just looks like there's this giant lightsaber coming out the yeah. front of your bike.
Yeah, and in the daytime, it looks like you just glued a telescope onto the front of your bike. So. Yeah, the headlight cover.
Well, you know, maybe that's what we call it. No. Okay, so here's the thing. It's really, really easy to overdrive the headlight on your motorcycle. We all know this. You put on your high beam, and by the time you're doing 85, you're like, yeah, I can't see more than like 7 feet in front of my bike.
Yeah.
You put this on the bike so you can do like 120 and not be overriding your headlights.
Yeah. And if you... I like it. You get kicked out of every squid group that you're in because they're like, the whole point of doing 120 at night is that you can't see where you're going. But at the same time, yeah, I like it. And it's just a big pair of glasses. And during the daytime, you could take them off. And it has to come with these ears that you glued to the fairing of your bike to hold it on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is good. This is getting good. Do we have a name for this product?
This is the catchy part. I love a good
dumb name.
Yes, because see, this was the secondary part to your text thread that I thought was genius yet hard. And how about Spec Savers?
Well, no, I just think you call it the spectacle.
Oh, my God. What if it's bike specs? Yeah, that's the spectacle. There you go. That's good. The spectacle.
I'm here all week.
Or the Cyclops, because it's makes your motorcycle a
that's
Cyclops.
That's really good. Swigs, which way are we going? This is like the bro in the man's ear. It's so
gotta be the Cyclops.
Okay. Maybe I'll put out a Patreon quiz and see whose team Spectacle and whose team Cycle.
Right. So for the Harley Road Glide, you're going to have to buy the ears that goes on the fairing, but it's going to be 18 different kits because Harley Davidson accessories, you're never allowed to buy just an accessory kit that bolts on. You have to buy like 18 other hardware kits and other pieces that also mounts it. So Harley Davidson, they're going to sell those ears separately, but I feel like most Japanese bikes that have dual headlights, the ears will come with the Spectacle kit, you know?
Okay, I'm gonna be honest. I didn't save our list from the text. It's too hard to go through it. What else have we got? I'm really glad you saved this information.
This is one of my favorites, and it kind of goes with the one that I didn't write down, but it would go hand in hand with this. It's the fuel injection to carb conversion kit. Oh yeah.
This is going to be sold exclusively to the hosts of Cleveland Moto.
Yes.
Well, actually, no. They did a hard turn, but this will be for all the old fogies out there.
Yeah.
Just like I can't understand what's wrong with this stubber there.
This is probably going to be purchased by the same guy who bought the Suicide Shift conversion kit.
Yes.
Well, what's going to make the fuel injection to carburetor conversion kit so amazing is that for cost reasons, it's just going to be one of like two adjustable carburetors. So you're going to be able to like just put on different attachments that adjust the Venturi size and everything. Yep. And these carbs are going to be fucking worthless.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be a pain in the ass. It's not going to work right. You're always going to be running too rich or too whatever. And then I think there's got to be something else as well.
The big
patent is going to be this like,
I already know what it is.
Okay.
You know how on like really old bikes from like the 40s and earlier, you had all the BMWs, you know, with the manual timing advance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right? Right. Yeah.
You're going to have a long cable that comes up so that you can put it like up on your tank, and it's going to be your idle mixture up on.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. Because you're taking it back old school.
So you're going to be able to change your idle mixture while you're riding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be helpful, too, because there's going to be some sort of adjustable jet thing as well. Not where you change the jets, but there's going to be like a second needle.
Just for like the needle height, yeah.
There's going to be another needle in the float bowl with a taper on it. So it's like one big gigantic jet, but by you pushing up this other... So you've got a needle coming down to the jet from the top and one from the bottom, and that way you can fine-tune, right? Because the top ones, these are going to be CV carbs for simplicity. And that needle's going to go up and down. But to fine tune it, you've got a separate needle that just holds still from the bottom. And it's going to be fucking impossible to tune, but it's theoretically
well,
possible.
Well, you're going to have to be able to tune it. Right. You're going to have to be able to tune it because a fuel injected bike reads RPMs and things like that with the computer and feeds more or less fuel. So you're going to have to be able to manually crank that. Might as well come with the prosthetic left arm. Because while you're riding, you're going to have that hold the left handlebar because you're always going to be turning.
I think.
Ooh, I think the customer, you're going to have to piggyback somehow off of. No, to make this work, you're going to have to disconnect your speedometer and run the speedometer cable to your carbs, and then the speed of the speedo cable will adjust the secondary needle on your
and it's got a cable hookup, and right next to it it's got like a digital plug for the the digital speedos. They really thought
perfect
about this. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. What's the name of this one?
This is called the
Well, we gotta think about who you're gonna sell this to first.
Yeah.
Well,
so this is gonna be for people that bought SR400s and just can't deal with the fact that it's fuel injected.
Well, I think it's also gonna be sold to people who think that like they're gonna be able to get more power out of like their Euro 5 and Euro 6 emission spec vehicles.
Oh, if it was just carbureted.
Because they're, you know, the electronics are just there to sap all the power away.
Right. Yeah. This is for people that have tried to do a complete exhaust swap on their like 2018 motorcycle and it's not working out because they took out the O2 sensor.
Yeah. His fuel injection's garbage.
Yeah. I have the tagline. So I have the tagline. Okay. It says, "Are you tired of fuel injection?"
Yeah.
Bye. Yeah.
Bye. All right, we got a winner. Yeah.
Bye.
I say we boom. Just go. Well, I mean, fuel injection. Well, no, because it can't be the carb, the smart carbs already take it. I don't know. We may have to circle back on a name. It might just hit me.
The man contraption.
This is good. One of my favorites that we came up with was I was kind of inspired by this last Sunday. If you are this hero, by the way, because this person has to listen to the podcast. So we were on our way to Meow Wolf in Denver on Sunday, and on 34, this guy rode right over the bridge into Loveland. But we were following this guy for a little bit from 34 in Greeley to Loveland, and he was on a Vespa GT300. It was like 46 degrees out. He was in full gear. He had a brake free on his helmet, and he was just cruising at like 61 miles an hour. And at one point sped up to pass us at like 66, and he was just holding his own in traffic. And he had a luggage rack on the back and front too on this GTS 300. Holy and I was cow. Like, what a fucking hero. But he had the brake free, which like really caught my eye. So I was like, I was thinking already about helmet add-ons. It was just in my head because I was like, oh, yeah, like we have these things, but like no one else in the fucking world does. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's probably a lot more people than I realize do, but it was the first time I saw someone else have one in the wild. And so I thought, what about a helmet add-on for air conditioning? And it's just like straight up a little miniature window unit that just sticks to the side of your helmet.
Well, if you're moving along and you can already get the airflow, the obvious solution is just like a straight up swamp cooler that like hooks up to the upper air intakes on your helmet.
Like it could vents. Be a swamp cooler too. I'm open to it being a swamp cooler, but like it. So,
well, it'll be marketed as an air conditioner, but it will be a swamp cooler.
Right. Yeah. So you'll have to like fill it up. You'll have to like put it under the sink and fill it up with water before you leave.
Yeah.
which is going to make it ridiculously heavy. But I love this. So like, yeah, you wire it to the harness of your bike. It goes off the battery and everything. It's just a little mini unit. It's like a swamp cooler, or whatever, just like off the back of your helmet. Right. Or the side or whatever you want, or straight on top. I don't care. But so this product, whatever we're going to call this, the really great thing is for a bunch of like Chinese or just budget helmet companies that don't give a fuck about being snow rated or whatever, this company's going to partner with them, and they'll supply a paper template to put to the side of your helmet to tell you the optimal places to drill the holes in to compromise it the least. They'll claim that in these spots, the helmet's not compromised because it only needs to retain just a DOT sticker.
And they'll have a bunch of different templates for each manufacturer and the screw holes.
Uh-huh.
And I sent you the screenshot of the name, because Trane is already an air conditioning company, at least here in California. I don't know if they're nationwide.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So TRANE.
The brain.
So we're going to call this Brane, BRANE. And my addition, because, you know, in California, you can't do anything without a permit. You can't put a fucking kiddie pool in your backyard without having the county come out and inspect to make sure it's safe. So for California residents, you're actually going to have to buy a miniature window unit to mount to like affix to your helmet, and then this will slide in, and you'll have to get the piece of wood that holds it in the sill and all that. You're actually going to have a miniature window pane mounted to the to your helmet wherever you decide to do this. So, and it's going to have to get inspected.
I love it.
Yeah.
Helmet air conditioning unit.
Yeah.
So dumb. I came up actually with a whole line of products, but what, before we get to that, what other ones did we come up with?
Well, this one was my helmet mounted contraption, and it was a helmet mounted phone mount, because we all know that they already make handlebar mounted phone mounts, and they already make helmet mounted camera mounts. So why not just make a big old mount that would like let you clip your phone out there and onto your helmet instead of having it rattle?
Didn't Ice-T already have this in Torque?
Yeah. Did he? Well, it was a Senna type unit that was just the size of a fucking telephone.
But, yeah, if you go back to On Any Sunday, I think it was, and look at some of the shots they did where they were they literally were duct taping like 8mm cameras to the dude's heads before sending them out onto the flat track. It would be like that. Right. You would just have a huge, and especially the bigger phones get, like they're basically like half tablets now. You would just have this huge tablet floating out there. But do you remember a couple years ago, Apple sent out that statement because so many motorcyclists were complaining the camera would shake afterwards. The camera would continue to shake even when if you were standing still and had it off the bike, it would jack up the camera from the vibrations. So they were saying, hey man, like it's we're gonna void the warranty if you mount it to your motorcycle, but there's nothing against mounting it to your helmet way out there.
So here's the thing. Is this gonna be something that like suction cups to like the top of your helmet and just hangs the phone like
no,
in front
of
your face?
I think that one of the attachments will for sure, so that you could see it. It'll be like riding in VR.
But so I've got another useless invention. What if instead of just like to accomplish the same thing, it's an extender that takes the GoPro mount that you've put on your handlebars, and it's just really long, so it goes up to your face.
That's awesome. That's perfect.
Just like a super long, like extra strong snake arm.
I like it.
That hooks onto a GoPro mount.
I love it. And additionally, there's the helmet, they're going to partner with Brain to get some of those templates if you do need to drill it into your helmet and have it come down so you know where it's least compromised.
Oh, I just remembered one that we came up with, the crotch cooler.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? Well, so this was
okay.
It was like a seat, but the whole seat is just a cooler. So you lose all of your padding, right? But at the very front of it, like where your crotch is going to be, it's just like super thin. It's basically just like a bit of like seat cover material there. So before you ride, you fill up the whole thing with ice, and then it's got a little drain off to the side. So it's cooling your crotch as you're riding along, but then as the ice melts, it goes out a drain, and like the rest of the ice from the back just pulls forward.
And you know what? This could be like the gun safe. This could be an underseat cooler for a little. You could put a sandwich under there.
Yeah, why not?
In some cases, you had a real
winner.
Country. It is. It is. You know.
All right.
Cool your balls.
I've got
one
for you.
Oh, what do you got, Swigs?
It is the universal windshield, where every mounting point is just the just interfaces with any standard GoPro mount.
Oh, so you can put accessories all around your windshield.
Or no, or if you just need to put it on any bike, it just the only plate, like it's just a piece of plastic, but everywhere it connects up, it's just got like the two holes for a GoPro mount to go on.
Yeah. Well, for it to go on any bike, because we've had a little bit of issues with trying to get when it comes to universal windshields, right, they claim to be, but, you know, a lot of them are just going to be clamps that go around your handlebars, but you may have to bend pieces of it to get them to go on. I mean, you can go on Alibaba and find universal windshields all day, but are they really universal? No.
I would say less than 30% will probably survive the first trip out.
Right.
And of the 70% that fail, 20% will probably fail, will be damaged in shipping. Like, they're always really sketchy.
Yeah, we had a hell of a time when we did that, when we were successful on that first iron butt, where we were making all those brackets to attach the Harley Sportster windshield to the W650.
Oh, yeah, I bet that was a pain in the neck.
I mean, it was great once it was on there. It hasn't been quite as pleasant to ride that bike since we took it off. It was ugly as fuck, but man, it made it nice to ride that bike. Yeah.
That gives
it actually
me...
increased the fuel efficiency as well.
Oh, it sure did. Yeah. Dad got like another little universal thing for it that fits okay and works okay, but it's not the same. Oh, that was a great win. Okay.
That gives me a great windshield idea. A totally useless windshield idea. It is a windshield that mounts similarly to how Barkbusters mount, where the windshield mounts out on your handlebars and then curves and doesn't touch anywhere else on your motorcycle, just at the handlebars. And then it curves out in front of you. So unfortunately, when you turn, the whole windshield will turn as well. But then you can mount it to any motorcycle with, you know, just by width of handlebar, and it just mounts. You only have to worry about two mounting points, and it's at the bar ends, and it doesn't have to touch
bar end mounting windshield.
And it's but it's because it's huge. I mean, it goes obviously from the outsides of the handlebars.
You can also find some way to attach it to the triple tree,
but then you won't be able to turn your handlebars.
3 points. Oh wait. To hold it.
Oh yeah, I see what you're talking about. Yeah, the triple tree. You would. Yeah, there you go. And yeah, it's just a massive, I mean, it's
triple tree or a crossbar.
Yeah. And it's hand wind protection. Ooh, and no, a windshield.
It'll come
in
one. With one of those like dirt bike crossbars for dirt bike, like thicker handlebars that don't have the cross. It'll come with one of those to mount in between. So then you've got the third point in the center.
Like
so then it's not going to just fall back on you.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
now we're talking.
I like it. And it's,
nobody needs that.
nobody needs that. It's just like a big sail. It's going to suck so bad to turn and wind. It's just going to pull you over to whatever side the wind's blowing.
Okay.
You had a good one. This is one of my favorite ones that you came up with, and it was WD-41.
Explain what this is.
WD-41 was like an anti-lubricant, and Pete's like, you would just basically take 200 grit sandpaper and let it dissolve in WD-40.
What?
It's good for removing rust.
I don't even know if it would dissolve in WD-40. It probably won't. But you just liquefy, just melt down or whatever you do to break down some sandpaper. It's like, so the idea is it's anti-lubricant. So you could just spray it on something instead of just having sandpaper.
Yeah, there you go.
Because WD-40 would be pretty good for carrying stuff suspended in it, right?
Isn't this what soda blasting is for?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but the idea is you would just spray it on a little localized area, and then you could just rub it with a rag, and it would be like sandpaper.
Yeah. You know, when you get out in the desert, and
it's a pointless invention. Right. I don't know why you're giving me this look.
You've already got sand
it's
in your bearings.
It's liquid sandpaper.
Yeah, but they're gritty.
Just thought that being an anti-lubricant.
Yeah, you spray a little WD-41.
Actually, technically, this exists. It's called Gojo.
Oh yeah, it would be much like Gojo, but you could spray it in the can.
Yeah, way more way more aerosol friendly. Yeah, basically there you go. And just spray it on your parts that
you're right, you could accomplish exactly the same thing with Gojo. You're right. But WD-41, or you could wash your hands with it too.
Now, here's one that you said already exists. So my idea was to have, you know, when you get really old, or like back in the 70s, tough guys used to walk around squeezing those like grip strengtheners all the time that were just like, It's just like a spring, you know, and you're squeezing both ends. But that, you would have that, but it would be your clutch and brake levers would be grip strengtheners. And Pete said, hey, they already exist. They're called Alibaba clutch
and brake cables. Brake cables.
Well, hang on. If you really need to get your workout in on your commute, you could have the grip strengtheners as bar end attachments.
Yeah, there you go.
And then just stick in, and they just sit under your brake and your clutch lever.
Yeah.
It so makes while it harder you're going to pull along, it in. You can get your hand workout.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time.
Why would you want that?
Again, it's a useless invention.
Yeah.
The others were at least like pretended to have some sort of.
No, this is to get that grip strength, and then eventually you won't need it. Why get a lighter pull clutch when you can get the grip strengthener and be, you know, actually strong? This idea led to Pete coming up with I think what's pretty practical. It's a pretty awesome invention, but it is kind of useless, was the pinch winch.
Oh, this was good. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this was either a clutch or brake lever or both, and they'll just operate your cables like they normally would, or you can just flick a little switch on them, like, you know, the little switch from ratcheting left and right on like your socket wrenches.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little switch like those on it, and it takes it from operating just normally like a clutch and brake lever into like just a ratchet
mode. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you can have a cable that you attach to it, and it can just be the world's slowest winch.
Yeah. So no more worrying about going out on single track by yourself and falling down a hill and having to get back up, you know, going down in a ravine, even 5 feet, if it's steep enough, it could be life threatening and take hours to work your way out. However, if you got the pinch winch,
or you could attach it to a stop sign. So if you're like an idiot, you don't know how to pick up your bike when you drop it at a stop sign, you can pick it up with your grip winch.
Yeah. So whether you're in the wild or on the streets. I know it's against the
stigma, but you know what would actually be really nice? Having a lock on your clutch. Because one of the things...
Literally the first useless invention I came up with was the clutch lock.
Yeah, it is.
Well, no, here's the use. You could have it so that pulling the clutch in, like, you don't have to fuck with stuff while you're riding along, and like you're messing around with stuff, but like you don't want to take your hand off the throttle and the clutch, but like you want to just coast while you're doing something. Like, that would be it is pretty useless because you're going to use this like once.
Yeah, why can't you just put it in top gear and just coast for like 10 seconds?
It depends. But yeah, like, well, I guess it is a useless invention then. Yeah. But like,
well, it's not because that it locks, it's going to have a release as well. So what you can do is make this something that even an idiot can wheelie with.
Yeah. Your very first invention. Oh,
the
invention...
instant clutch pop by hitting a button. Yeah.
Your very first one was the clutch lock. The
perfect consistent clutch pop.
Well, it's not actually. If anyone knows anything about doing wheelies, you actually need quite a bit of feel in how you let it go. But it's all about the timing. I mean, you do want to dump it, but not like I don't know. It's a weird thing. I don't know if I could press a button to do a wheelie, but I'm just imagining a bunch of people just getting brand new R6s and then just like attaching this thing to it because someone told them, like, oh yeah, you'll do massive wheelies, it'll dump the clutch, and just people looping their bikes instantly.
Yeah, your very first useless moto invention was the clutch lock. Your sixth one was the clutch dumper,
right? Yeah, they're the same thing, really.
Yeah,
well hang on, here's another potential feature. In much the same way that bikes, like high spec, like high performance bikes today, have launch control, do we need to have bikes with wheelie control?
That's so that what
you
that...
can never 12 o'clock your bike while wheeling. Oh, so you can never
12 o'clock it. Mm.
So this device exists.
Or just perfectly get it to 12 o'clock every time. No,
this device actually exists. So what it looks like, so it's a wheelie bar, But what it's actually really clever.
And no, this would be entirely like in the IMU and the ECU.
Right. But do you know the device I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll just explain for the listeners real quick because it's a wonderful thing. So it looks like a it almost looks like a rear wheel, like spool stand. And it comes off the back of the motorcycle. And it's you have to adjust it for each bike. You just put it a certain number of degrees up from the ground. Oh my god, these fucking dogs again. I told these fucking kids to keep the dogs fucking quiet. Anyway, so anyway, if you start getting up too high, as you press this wheel up, it puts pressure down on your rear brake, which brings the bike back down.
Mm.
And you can just purchase these for like $130. So there's really no excuse to not be awesome at wheelies, honestly, is the point. Wow. Should we all go in together and get one, guys?
Yes. Let's put it on the gold.
They might be like $300, but a small price to pay for just, you know, being able to dial in exactly where your balance point is and tuning your thing for that. Yeah, it's a wonderful little thing. So you're just saying, yeah, just have it in the IMU. But again, the balance point, I don't know, is the weight of the rider is going to affect the balance point a little bit too.
You know what? Every motorcycle,
they can work it out.
You're right. The IMU
can work it out by acceleration. You know.
Yeah. BMWs also have like a sensor on the shocks that tells like about, that's how they adjust the shock is with the, that sensor tells it how much of a load's on it. So that could also be part of it. It could tell it like, hey, a big rider got on and now they're doing a wheelie. Let's,
should we work on the software, Swigs? And this is how we get our jobs at Honda.
Yeah. Yes, Honda would love that because the more more they can avoid litigation from stunting, the more they are likely to hire you.
That's actually true. The vast majority of riders are never going to do it. So if you just put it in there that if a bike goes past its balance point, it's just going to apply a rear brake automatically. There's literally no downside to building this into the bike.
Mm-hmm. You know, alongside this, you could have a feature that that, you know, once bikes are like recording all the metrics and like all the trip data, kind of like a Tesla or a modern car does when they have like those detailed record, like digital records.
Uh-huh.
Your bike should have a cop mode where if you've clearly done something illegal, then it's got AI going over the logs to see like you've clearly done something reckless. Let's forge the logs and make it look way more tame.
Okay. All right. I'm into it. Okay. All right, let's keep moving. This is great. I'm loving all of this.
One of yours was a gear shift cozy, and I'm not 100% sure how that would work. I forget what that one was.
I was just throwing out a lot of dumb ideas and seeing what stuck to the wall. But along with the clutch lock, a truly useless invention I came up with was the gear lock. It's like the opposite of a quick shifter. it's like not only do you have to press in your clutch, but there's also another lever for your gear lock that you have to make sure is disengaged. I guess the only thing for the gear lock, I guess, would be as if like you had like a DCT bike and you wanted to make sure that you stayed in like third gear for like a hard like interstate overtake or something. I don't know. it's a dumb thing.
Yeah. Here's another one that I really liked that you thought of that actually is really ridiculous, but it's pretty funny. It's it kind of goes along with the pinch winch. It's like tire inflator grips. So instead of the pinch winch, you would have a little tiny, tiny pump that would pump about, you know, 8 cubic, grams of air at a time.
So it's an oversized, on your throttle hand, right? It's an oversized grip that you can squeeze, right? And And so you just attach to the bar end this little tube from the bar end up to your tire with a one-way valve on it, and you can just slowly pump up your tires with your hand crank.
Yeah, it would take you so long, but just like the pinch winch, eventually you'd get there. Hey, could you imagine your handlebars if you had the grip strengtheners, the pinch winch, and the tire inflator grips?
Yeah, you're right. You're going to need the grip strengtheners to operate your
and to top it off, you have that.
So the tire inflator is from the same company. Pinch Winch brings you both products.
Yeah.
So it's the inflator by Pinch Winch.
Yeah.
Coming to a Harbor Freight near you.
Yeah. that is something that they would sell at Harbor. They might actually sell at Harbor Freight. I had a couple that were kind of.
I forgot.
Yeah, that one was really that was pretty so, good.
We could make that, and someone would buy it.
Yeah, best dressed products. They have some, one of everything. They would definitely sell that on their website.
Someone like the next person who's taken a KLR around the world just so they can get on Adventure Rider Radio will buy it.
Yeah. Right? So I had one too, and this one isn't necessarily for your motorcycle. It's for the rider. This is, the summers have been increasingly hot. Like this winter has been insane, but the summers have been increasingly hot around the entire country. And I think this coming summer, what we're going to see is a trend in motorcycle helmets, halfies, a lot of stuff that people didn't normally, all the full face guys are going to be buying 3/4 or modulars, but I think we're going to see a new product, which is a convertible helmet. But it's not a flip up. The top is actually like a rag top, like a Miata or like an old Volkswagen Cabriolet with like the little skeleton and the vinyl, and you just roll it back and get the nice sunburn on top of your head.
Well, no. So I can fix the sunburn. What it needs to do is it needs to operate. So this is something cars don't have anymore, and I really miss. It's a helmet with a moonroof.
Oh yeah,
and. So the great thing about a moonroof is it has three main components, right? So the moonroof in the real 90 sense of a moonroof has one, the glass on the very top.
Right.
Two, it's got a slide inside of it that's just like a plastic cover.
Yeah.
Three, and if it's a real fucking moonroof,
oh, it's got the polarized layer.
Well, no, the polarized layer is a sheet of cloth that pulls out on a spring, and then you hook it to the front, right?
Oh.
So you take the helmet off and you pull up or down, the opaque layer, the sunscreen layer, and then on the top is the actual glass. So there's like four different ways you can have it. Like, do I want the sun coming through heating up my head, or do I want that open and it's letting in breeze, but I'm blocking the UV, or do I want it to just be one giant vent? So I put the hard plastic layer down, but it's like the most ultimate, let's face it. Motorcycle air vents have come a long way. Like back in like 2004, the vents on the top of your motorcycle helmet did jack shit for moving air around your head, right? But now you can feel a little something. But I'm saying if it just like is like 40% of the top of the helmet, you're really going to feel some air circulate around that helmet, right?
Maybe get some bird shit on your head while you're at it.
The key is that sunscreen layer that just pulls forward and clips to the front. That's what makes it
a
motorcycle helmet moonroof.
Yes, I like it. You, keeping on this helmet theme, you thought of one after we were talking about the air conditioning unit. You had a really good one, which was a alluding to your break free, you know, the guy with the break free, it would be a DVD player for your pillion that mounted to the back of your helmet.
I forgot about that.
I think that's pretty tight.
The helmet mounted DVD player.
I guarantee you, you can go on Alibaba right now and you can find an iPad mounting bracket that'll go on the back of a motorcycle helmet. Like, this may already exist.
I'm so glad you wrote these down. You're the DVD player for your belly.
Yeah. Man, take your kids riding and never have a complaint again, you know?
Someone would buy that. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it happening. And you know what? When you're by yourself and there's no pillion, the people behind, you know, whenever you're driving and you see people with the video on, you're like, oh, look at those idiots watching TV. And then you end up staring at it yourself. You could, yeah. You could.
What is that? Is that the live action Aladdin? What's
exactly. Yeah, you could transfix the people behind you. Probably increase your chances of getting rear-ended. But yeah, just have it playing for people behind you. And if Senna was a boss, they would make it so that the Bluetooth would Bluetooth to the car's audio behind you, so they could actually get the sound too.
Yeah. Wait, so are we at this point? Are we just following like the old school CRT TV and VCR combo that you used to be able to get in cars?
There you go.
Well, no, this would be like the DVD players that if your car isn't fancy enough to come with like the flip down screens for the kids, like you get the ones that, you know, have the elastic band to them and you put them to the back of the headrests.
Oh, right.
Okay, yeah. Okay. It's that. But it's just designed to like suction cup to the back of your helmet.
Yeah, yeah, it's totally cheap and cheesy. Yeah, you actually have to put a DVD into it, like a full size DVD into it every time you load it.
Yeah, it's like 520 resolution.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. I think it's awesome.
You can have a lot of fun with it though, like, because if you combined it with a motorcycle dash cam, you could have like X-ray. And just project what's in front of you.
Oh, yeah, well. That would be great. I mean, usually, I guess it depends, but I'd say on most modern big touring bikes, the pillion can kind of see a little over the driver of the bike anyway, but not necessarily. I mean, a lot of passengers are significantly shorter. I don't know. That's. I feel like Claire is able to see over me on the Goldwing, but you're right. But yeah, who knows what bike you're on exactly? Yeah,
it'll be adjustable. Then you could. It'll have like a slide rack on it where you can slide it up, so it'll be right in front of her eyes.
Well, again, if it's all part of the same thing, it can just come with a camera that you mount to the forehead of your helmet as well, and then the screen on the back, and that's how you see through.
Oh, I see. I totally misheard what you said. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Could you build this into like a helmet cover, like, you know, like the Elmo and Grover helmet covers? Could you build it into that?
Yeah. I love it. You know, they just need to make those fiber optic cable helmets that they're like putting on all the like military stuff, so that like you can kind of see through it, you know what I mean? It looks like Predator sort of. They need to put that, make helmets out of that. How about this one that I thought of? It was the brake fluid reservoir. So like, if you know, yeah, just when one's not enough, you have that extra cool one, the chrome or the gold colored one that feeds into the reservoir. Just, it's like a piggyback shock for no reason. It's just a reservoir.
Right. So weird.
Oh, is this like you've completely neglected your motorcycle and you're actually running out of brake fluid in your reservoir.
So you, carry another reservoir
to empty into the other reservoir.
It's more of a flex. Well, no,
it works like a piggyback shock.
Yeah.
So I think what it does is the way I would have it work, because this is how I would have it work, so someone would actually buy it. Now, what you should do is just once a season change your fucking brake fluid, because it costs almost nothing, and it turns out that? It's pretty easy to do. But
are you thinking like you have a system that like drops a hundredth of a milliliter of brake fluid out every time you squeeze?
Exactly.
And then it's so a total loss system.
Say it's a circular system, but yes, what it does, but it's got like a membrane through the middle of it. So what it does is it circulates
some from your piggyback into the regular reservoir, but every time exactly you break, it sucks a little into it. So when this bar gets to the top, you know you've worked all of the fluid, and now it's time that you definitely need, you should change it, right? Yeah.
And also for me,
that is a terrible idea. I like
it. Is
someone would actually buy, or the other, another useless invention would just be color changing brake fluid. So when it's no longer pure, it changes color.
A really useless invention,
or
would be
just change it every year for $5.
Yeah. And get a Mighty Vac. I got a Mighty Vac, and I was like, oh man, Mighty Vac's got to be so expensive. They're cheap as shit. And one guy can do a whole brake flush.
I will say, I would pay like 8 times the amount that brake fluid costs for brake fluid that I had to change like a third as often.
Mm.
I fucking hate brake fluid.
I find that changing... Oh, well, so brake fluid is not nearly as nasty as it used to be. The problem is that we've bought so many old bikes that have the old school... that have like 20-year-old brake fluid in them. Mm. That, and it's the old shit that really will like eat your fucking skin off.
Yeah.
Brake fluid these days isn't nearly as... Well, the brake fluid's still pretty bad, but paint is a lot better. But the brake fluid itself isn't like the dot four, dot five stuff, dot five and a half. It's I find it's not as bad as it like the old school shit was. I don't know what the science behind that is, but I know like with like my old CB350, the first time I paid attention to the brakes on that, I was like, this is fucking horrible. And the last time I changed brake fluid on the Goldwing, the guy had done something, had like said that he changed the brake fluid right before, but I didn't believe him. So I just changed it anyway. And I remember spilling some on the tank and going like, oh, fuck. Well, the tank covers is not a real tank on that bike. But yeah, I remember going, oh, fuck. And then it was just fine. I just expected it to be 30-year-old brake fluid, but yeah. So either the fluid's not as bad or the paint's better or both. But yeah, you and I have had some horrible experiences with what I'll call vintage brake fluid. And this is the source of your anxiety around
the source out of the stuff out of the CB was particularly caustic. It was
And you should get the CB1000.
Yeah,
that was probably like Honda OEM brake fluid. Yeah, from the dealer. That was the original brake fluid.
And you just like get like a little speck of it on your hand, and like you feel it for the rest of the day.
Yeah,
it's awful,
horrible stuff.
Yeah,
the answer is wear gloves, but what kind of pussy does that?
That yeah.
But sure. Even then, like you end up just getting like some on your wrist or something. Like you can't. But it's so thin, like it gets everywhere.
Yeah, you're right. It transfers from one spot to another. You're right. It's
the herpes of like motorcycle
fluids.
It just gets everywhere, no matter how careful you are.
Yeah. Additionally to that, because brake fluid also when it gets hot, it boils. That makes the air bubbles. Your brakes get spongy, so on and so forth. Cross drilled brake lines to cool down, keep it cool. To reduce the risk of boiling.
Another total loss system.
A total loss and totally useless moto invention.
Let's see. So where are we at now with inventions? Are we getting close to the bottom of the barrel?
Yeah, I think your list is coming up. There's a couple more. This one was real stupid. We're getting toward the bottom of our text thread list. Mine was a moose when you go off-roading, or like a lot of the off-road guys, instead of using a tube and getting constant punctures, they'll put a moose in the tire, and that way you can't get a flat, right? And you can get mooses of different densities and things like that.
I don't know what this is. How do I not know this?
He's talking about like
a moose is like instead of using an inner tube, you just stick this big like rubber donut inside your tire.
Oh, yeah. The internet is real divided on if these are good or bad.
Yeah. Well, a lot of like GNCC, a lot of racers use them off-road because you can't afford a flat when you're racing, right? So a lot of people
like Dakar kind of stuff, sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and GNCC people that are going through woods courses and like King of the Hammers type of shit, they use these because they might even trash them after every day. You know, they might just only use them for one day because you can't really get up to speed on them because they'll melt, you know. But mine was to have a mousse made of goo, being that stuff that like mountain bikers and runners squeeze out of the tube, you know, to eat as nourishment afterwards. So this was a goo mousse, and as you're riding and you get out there on the trail and you're getting real hungry, you just, since it's not you know, air in your
just
tube
take
anyway.
A hit off the, just take the Schrader valve out. Yeah, and take a hit off your tire.
The Schrader valve is like a little straw, and you just slurp some out of your tire and stick the cap back on, and there you go. It's a goo mousse. And eventually, if you get real hungry and slurp it all out, you're going to be riding on a flat back to camp. So don't do that. But yeah, that was one of my real stupid ones.
I think I've got the dumbest idea so far that somebody would actually go for.
Okay.
So changing your tires is kind of a pain in the ass, you know, if you're not set up for it. But if you're buying like premium tires, a lot of the times, you know, the rims aren't all that much more expensive than the tires themselves. I propose the sealed tire that comes with the rim. And when you're done, when the tire's worn out,
you just swap the whole
thing. You throw away the tire and the rim.
Yeah.
And you get a whole new wheel with a new tire
on. It's like the old glass headlamp assembly when the bulb's done.
Yeah, the old sealed beams.
The whole thing's done. Yeah, yeah.
But for exactly. Tires and wheels.
This only works if they're mags. And they've got to be... They're gonna have
these
to
be the
like,
sketchiest Chinese mags you've ever seen in your life.
Well, no, what they're gonna have to look like is those like Tour de France like bicycle tires, because it's got to be such thin material that like the air doesn't pass through them. It's just a sealed wall on either side.
Or maybe they're just the most like premium carbon fiber you've ever seen in your life. But because it's all one single piece, they're just mass producing them.
Yeah. And it's vulcanized like a sneaker.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay.
I like it.
That or another useless invention would just be like your own 3D printable rim.
Okay. Somebody's had to have done that.
I mean, you're going to have to do it in like four parts because no one's got a printer that big. It's going to be a problem. And what you're going to go back to then if you're trying to 3D print rims is you're going to get back to the problem that Comstar had in the beginning where they were mag wheels, but they still had to be riveted together. And you still couldn't put actual tubeless tires on them. They were mags, but you still had to put tube tires on them is what you'd run into. But okay. So I think we're just down to my whole line of products that I invented now.
Yeah, pretty much. Do you remember pink Loctite? Do you remember suggesting that one?
No. What was pink Loctite?
You just had pink Loctite and then
I remember what pink Loctite was. Pink Loctite. So you know, Loctite comes in like blue and red and brown and whatever, right? And
they're all different strengths. You're permanent, you're temporary.
Right.
And yeah.
I would say pink Loctite is the weakest Loctite, and it's for your tire valve stems.
To keep the caps on.
It's basically Elmer's glue with pink. It's basically pink Elmer's glue is what it is. But it's pink Loctite. Tight for your house.
Nice.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I didn't realize what a roll I was on with these.
Yeah, you had some good ones. That and the high friction cables.
The high friction cable. So Yeah, I think by far the best idea I had was a whole, I've got the name, the brand, and everything for this. So, like I said, I mentioned earlier, I asked ChatGPT to come up with baby products for motorcycles. So I came up with Baby Glide, and this is all infant-based motorcycle accessories. So obviously, we've got the motorcycle baby seat. So this adapts your car seat to the pillion seat of your motorcycle. But it's more than that, right? I mean, there's a whole set of like baby motorcycle clothing, but here's the genius part, right? Who's going to buy this, right? You know, this is going to be for 65 and up who want to ride with like their grand or great grandchildren, right? So, I mean, and you know, and these are
there's got to be chaps involved,
right? So, but to really get it, I'm like, what kind of branding will sell this to both the very young and the very old? And there's a specific brand for it that is extremely out of fashion right now. I think we could pick up the licensing really cheap. Hanna-Barbera, right? So we've got like Bam Bam and Pebbles in like biker gear on all the boxes, right?
You could have like.
So you got Fred Flintstone on his electric glide with like Pebbles in a car seat on the back, right?
Pebbles can be the name of the sugar candy that looks like a baggie of meth. You know?
And then Junkie, you had the great idea of on all the little like baby cuts, they have El Kabong on the back. Oh, I think we've lost Junkie. Hold on. Oh. And then we've also got, so it keeps going further. It gets deeper, right? So let's say the baby that you want to take on your motorcycle isn't just a baby. It's more of a toddler. We got you covered. Rear peg risers, right?
Okay.
Well, and then also there's other things like what if there's more, trust me. So but the kinds of people that are obsessed with taking their babies on their motorcycle with them, they're going to want to take their pets too. So Baby Glide can have a whole nother set of pet products for your motorcycle. Now, remember, we've got the Hanna-Barbera license, right? So there's a little Jetsons thing here. All the pet products can be called Astro Glide.
I like so, it.
And here's a question for you. Is there a premium cat carrier for a motorcycle right now?
I don't know about cat carriers. There are plenty of like leather sissy bar bags that you can put chihuahuas and shit in. But I'm saying for Astro Glide, let's have like a full on dog crate that attaches to the back of your bike.
Can you get like a get back whip that goes on a dog's collar that's got like a wire in it? So
no,
it hangs
but Astro Glide is going to sell a get back leash.
Nice.
So it's a 2-in-1. When you get off the bike, you remove your get back whip and you walk the dog with it.
That's actually a pretty practical application for a get back whip today.
Yep. I put some thought into this. There's going to be reflective collars for the dogs. The Astro Glide collars. Those are definitely not going to see a secondary use. What else did I come? I didn't write down a lot of that. The baby,
you know,
glide stuff.
One of the best stuff you had though was the Hanna-Barbera idea, because HB is really close to HD, so you could without infringing on Harley's copyright, you could really have a lot of crossover there and a lot of the.
Yeah.
You know what? How about instead of a big number one, you know, they're number one, you know,
right.
Harley Davidson. How about number two?
Why not? Yeah.
not that the product's number two, but it's like Looney Tunes, I don't know. Maybe we have two ends. But yeah, the something that you mentioned was, you know, definitely having, like, you know, Fred Flintstone on a Harley. And I had it got me laughing because, you know, one of my favorite Halloween costumes years ago was I was a scuzzy biker, and I went to a thrift store and found this shirt with Fred Flintstone on, like, this rock Harley Davidson looking thing. This is so on the mark. You are so close.
Yeah, we've got 2-year-olds and 68-year-olds at the same time with the same marketing,
both in diapers. We could make a diaper line for both.
That's true. Leather diapers.
Well, you know, the baby boomers are really getting up there now. Do we need a set of just jet black Depends?
Yeah. That
just so they're way less noticeable, to match the look.
Yeah, so not riding up their backs while they're,
if they do ride up, then they're still not really
exactly visible. Yeah. This is good.
God dang it. What was the, I think Suzuki and Harley had the same, there, it was some collection. Ooh. And it was studded.
Ooh. What if we have a, like a sort of Harley Davidson themed, we can advertise this for the babies, but the boomers will end up using it a lot. Also, it's like a set of Depends, but it's got like the condom catheter kind of system. Right. But what it is like I said, it's a little, like, you know, catheter for when you're riding along. Right. So like the idea is like, oh, this is like, you'll buy this and save face. So it's like the baby can like take a piss on your 4-hour road trip without you having to stop and change a diaper. But really, you're just going to apply this. Right. But yeah. It's the Cathunder.
I like it. We talked about El Caban.
I'm just spitting gold. Everything I say and do should be recorded. Yeah.
All right.
Break yes. more pipes.
King Midas. This is,
yes.
The El Caban will be the diaper line because, who took an El Caban?
El Caban is the diaper line. The Cathunder and the El Caban. it sells itself.
Yeah.
You know?
And it may sound like really stupid to some people, especially to young, like, Dyna Bros or so. But honestly, baby boomers are probably like weeping right now. Like, these are the ideas we need.
They've
people
been
to
waiting
hear.
Their whole lives. Yeah.
Shit. Yeah. Yeah. This is the idea that no one will listen to. MIC, if you're out there, AMA, maybe instead of advocating for helmet laws and this shit, you advocate for, you know, adult products to be built into.
So here's what I'm going to do before we start pushing it and we start getting into lesser ideas. I say we stop this and let's revisit this in like 4 months.
Yeah.
For another round of completely idiotic motorcycle inventions. We've gone quite a good amount of time here and we haven't had to linger too long or recycle any ideas that, this is good. Let's quit while we're ahead on this.
Perfect time to break because I gotta head out, guys.
That's not a problem. All right. So yeah. I guess just let's do a little break here. Let's put a sound effect in, and we'll call this good. We might come back with an email segment. This might be the end of the episode. I'm not entirely sure. As usual, I'm filling time while I load my sound effects because they're not working for some reason.
I've been practicing. Does that sound good?
Let's fucking end this episode. Yeah. All right, let's no ceremony. Let's just fucking go out, okay? And I don't want to die. I just want to ride on my motorcycle. Uncle.